And good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome, guys, to the Business Economic Show or segment or program. You might be wondering why you're hearing Dwight's voice. Well, the fun thing is that Kanjengo is not here for tonight. That's me. But also on tonight, we have a very interesting discussion, and introducing my guest is Dr. Klaus Wiswedel. Doctor, welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight.
It's an absolute pleasure, and good evening to you and all your listeners.
Doctor, our discussion for tonight is a very interesting one, starting off with that, because we've been taking you off from Cape Windhoek Fertility Clinic. So our discussion will be a little bit in a niche discussion, looking at some of the aspects that Cape Windhoek Fertility Clinic has or Solo specializes in. One of them, Doctor, is IVF or ICSI. Doctor, what are these? Or can I first ask, Doctor, can you just, you know, sort of like explain a little bit about yourself and then we get into that general discussion?
Well, I don't know what to talk about myself, but I'm one of the directors of the Cape Windhoek Fertility Clinic, and we're also running a clinic in Cape Town, run a clinic in Johannesburg. We were running a clinic in Nairobi, in Kenya as well, which is now running on its own. And so we are Southern Africa and Eastern Africa specialists, you can say that.
All right. Now, Doctor, starting off with our main discussion for tonight, which is IVF and ICSI. For our listeners, Doctor, what are these two acronyms or these two abbreviations that I'm talking about or mentioning, actually?
Well, you're jumping right into the deep end here, because IVF is in vitro fertilization. If you translate that, it means a fertilization in the laboratory, in vitro, in glass. And what it actually means, we take the act of fertilization out of the body and we do it in the laboratory. So we take sperm and eggs, put it in the laboratory under the right conditions, and then fertilization can occur and embryo starts growing. That's the basis of in vitro fertilization. ICSI is one step further. What we do there is, if we don't have enough sperm to achieve fertilization, then we can take one single sperm and through a very complicated machinery, inject one single sperm into an egg. So with men who've got very poor semen quality, we can still achieve fertilization. And it's a very important tool in our armament, and we use it very often.
Now, Doctor, in terms of the prevalence element, because some of the discussions has always been, even in the everyday discussions about, you know, men indicating who's the fertile component to a relationship, women sometimes being given that, you know, that stigma element. The prevalence of the of taking a look at the rate of infertility in Namibia, you know, does something like that exist, Doctor? Is there a prevalence rate or a percentage?
Look, the prevalence of infertility is, strangely enough, all over the world the same. It's more or less 50% of the population, which is actually a large percentage. That means 15% of all couples fail to fall pregnant when they want to and seek a gynecologist for help. And it's the same in Namibia, as in South Africa, as is in Germany and other countries. If you look at the prevalence in terms of who is, in inverted commas, at fault, then 30% is the male, 30% is female, and the other 40% is mixed causes. So in 30% is the male, so we usually start with investigating the male first, because it's simple, it's cheap, and it's not painful, usually.
Not usually. We have to say usually. Now, Doctor, if I'm still going to stay on that one aspect, just in terms of the percentages for the prevalence rate. If we had to look at the stigma element, and this is just, you know, slightly explaining that before we head into our next discussion point. In terms of the stigma, where does that usually come from?
Look, there's a big cultural issue there, and in different populations, it's different. And very often men, they don't feel that they must go to fertility treatment. They send their wives. They send their wives to the laboratory. They send their wives to the doctor. Get yourself sorted out. Because men, they have sex and sex is going all right, so they don't think something could be wrong with you, with him. But there is very often something wrong with them. And that stigma and that problem must be overcome. Because we will not treat a couple without seeing the man or the husband as well. And that's an absolute condition, because so often we find that women go through treatment after treatment with gynecologists and GPs and traditional healers. And then after years and years of treatment of all different kinds, we find that the husband actually has got no sperm or very poor sperm quality. So he's actually the first one who must come. And then we look at the wife.
Doctor, then heading into sort of, you know, in terms of like the clinic itself, that's now with Cape Ventoux Fertility Clinic. How long has the clinic been operational in Namibia? Because the network sounds impressive. If people go like, wow, Cape Town. Wow, you know, Kenya as well. If you're in Namibia, how long?
Our team, there's the lady who's part of the team, the embryologist, is with us here. We started here in end of 2013. And we had the first IVF pregnancy in Namibia at the end of 2013. Of course, that child is already now almost 10 years old or 9 years old. And then we had more and more success, and the clinic got bigger and bigger. And people noticed they didn't have to go to Cape Town anymore. They didn't have to go to Johannesburg anymore. People from Angola noticed they didn't have to go to Brazil or to Portugal. So they come down to Windhoek. So it has changed over the years, and we've become busier and busier over the years.
And now, with that thing, Doctor, although you mentioned the first pregnancy already, the, you know, if that element, if you have to look at the couples, was there an element of them, you know, having to try and convince them in terms of the procedure itself, you know, going through the process of visit of practicing IVF or exploring IVF? How was there some sort of hurdle to get over first in terms of the mental?
No, I think IVF was already well known in Namibia because we were working in Cape Town. We got a large proportion of a patient from Namibia, which is probably their first travel point, going to Cape Town or Johannesburg. And because we noticed there's so many patients coming from Namibia, then we said, why don't we make a clinic in Windhoek, in Namibia itself? And patients actually asked us, why don't you come to Namibia? Initially, we only did a few consultations. We were overwhelmed by the response. And then we jumped into the big investment. And unfortunately, it's very expensive to start a clinic. We jumped into the big investment to start actually an IVF clinic here. And that's how it came about.
All right, right. Doctor, and then taking a look at how many pregnancies to date? Because the first one was 2013. That kid is now.
I must get my piece of paper here because I usually don't count them daily. But we've got 482 pregnancies, three sets of triplets.
Wow.
And lots of twins, which we haven't counted. But there are more than 480, almost 500 pregnancies.
Wow, that's quite pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's like a small village already. Yeah?
It's like a city already. Now, in taking a look at the treatment, what treatment options can couples look? Because I now have to say couples, some of the guys who still believe it's just a woman's idea, guys, please, it's for the two of you. It's not just a one-man show or one-woman show sometimes. Doctor, in terms of the treatment, what can the couples look at?
Well, there's not one thing for everybody. It's like going somewhere and say, how much is a car or something like that. It's there's treatment, different treatment options for different problems. We start with the simplest is intrauterine insemination. We call it IUI or artificial insemination with husband's sperm, where there's only a minor abnormality in the husband's sperm analysis. And we can do intrauterine insemination at the time of ovulation. And that's relatively successful. One can do it two or three times. And if it's successful, then, of course, everybody's happy. We do artificial insemination. Then, of course, we do IVF in all its varieties. We do ICSI. We also do sperm donation. We have a sperm bank. We do egg donation. And so we do the whole ambit of fertility treatments here in Windhoek. And everything is done locally.
Yeah, exactly. And then, Doctor, just for some of the guys to know, in terms of the sperm bank and the sperm egg donations, or the sperm donation egg, how does that work? If you can just walk some of the clients through or some of the listeners through. And guys, please, there's not things that you've watched in a movie. This is serious talk. So you gotta think about it. Doctor, just walk us through that. How does some of those things work?
Let's first talk about sperm donation. There is a group of males who don't have sperm. They might have serious previous infections or they've got hormonal abnormalities, and there's just no sperm in their testes.
Mm.
Sometimes we can try to get some sperm by operating on the testes and taking a small piece of tissue out and see whether we can find sperm. An operation which we call TESA, testicular sperm aspiration. But very often there we also don't find anything. So if there's nothing there, if there's nothing we can do sperm donation. That means you've got a group of young men, they're happy to donate sperm, the sperm gets frozen. The donors get very carefully screened. We check them for all infectious diseases, for HIV, and you name it, the whole works. I mean, they get really well screened. We take a, we make a donor profile, their education, their likes, their hobbies. And these profiles get given to the couple who are looking for a sperm donor. They can then choose a sperm donor of their liking, maybe the same background, cultural background. And then they choose this donor. We have all the straws in store in our the liquid nitrogen tank. So on demand, we can take them out, thaw, and inseminate. Or we use it in IVF.
Yeah.
Can be done as well. A similar process with egg donation as well. Some women, they're getting too mature. They cannot produce eggs anymore. They're menopausal. They cannot produce eggs. But they still want to have a child. And very often, the husband never had a child, and there's a woman who's never had a child. She's maybe 45 years old, but still want to have a child. Then we can help them with egg donation. Again, we've got a group of young Namibian women who are prepared to donate their eggs. Now, this is a little bit more complicated because the women have to go undergo IVF treatment. Means their ovaries need to be stimulated so they produce eggs, and we have to take the eggs out in our theater. It's a relatively fast procedure, takes about 10 minutes, but we collect those eggs, and then we inseminate those eggs with the husband's sperm. The resultant embryos gets put back in the patient's womb, and then she can fall pregnant. And that's actually the highest, the treatment with the highest chance of a pregnancy is egg donation. Because the women who donate the eggs are all very young. They're like 23, 24 years old. And so that treatment we like because we get lots of smiles and hugs and everybody's happy. And, you know,
exactly, yeah.
And we do it quite often.
Doctor, do the ladies then that also donate, do they also go through the same screening process like the gentleman that donates sperm as well?
Yes, the same screening process. Exactly. It's very rigorous. And also with the ladies, you make a profile where the, look, the procedure is anonymous. But still, we make a profile where educational hobbies and all that kind of stuff is written down. So the patient can choose which one they like.
Exactly, exactly. Now, doctor, if we have to take a look at the cheapest treatment, that's now, like you mentioned, there is a shopping list that people can look at, couples. But if they have to look at, I think you mentioned, which is one of the quickest ones.
Artificial insemination.
Was it artificial, yes. Walking through each one of these treatments for couples or for clients, which one would you know be the cheapest, if you can say that?
Well, the cheapest is artificial insemination because there's not much really in a laboratory to do. The only sperms get washed and separated. So in total, with medication, with a medical procedure, with a laboratory procedure, everything together, you look at around 7,000 rand.
All right. And then if we have to look at IVF, still that will include the entire 7,000 cost as well, yeah?
Yeah.
And then with the, if you have to do, if how do you also become a fertility or IVF specialist? That's not for people wanting to get into the role of training or becoming in that medical, you know, aspect, doctor.
Sure. That's a little bit complicated.
Yeah.
Now, in Namibia, we don't have any training facilities for reproductive medicine specialists. That's what we call ourselves. It's a fertility specialist. In South Africa, since about 15 years, we've got training for reproductive medicine specialists. It's an additional training of 4 years on top of being a gynecologist.
All right.
So it's a long time you're in training. First you do study, then you're an intern. Then you specialize in gynae, and then you do reproductive medicine. So there's many, many years of training before you can call yourself a reproductive medicine specialist. Because that training is not available in Namibia as yet. Everybody has to come to Namibia from outside. And our specialists come from South Africa at the moment, and we treat patients here. If the treatment, if the qualification is reorganized here, then I can possibly start training reproductive medicine specialists in Namibia, but we're not that far yet.
All right. Doctor, and then if we had to look at becoming one of the specialists, being an embryologist, and our guest as well, who's not going to talk to us, but doctor, in that same sense, what is it, if we start with embryologist, what is it in terms of starting from the beginning part?
Look, I mean, I'm talking not really, I'm not an embryologist, so I cannot really talk well about it, but of course I know a little bit about it. Embryologist is a very dedicated profession because they must be extremely accurate and they must do these procedures repeatedly and they must do it repeatedly good. To inject sperm into an egg is a highly, highly sophisticated procedure. You're working with a sophisticated machinery, which is hugely expensive, and it takes many years of training. And usually they come from a med tech background, or they can start training nowadays directly as an embryologist. The training usually is between 3 and 4 years, but usually even then they're not quite ready yet. They need another 2 years, 3 years maybe, of doing ICSI repeatedly so that they really become good at it.
Is it close to almost like surgeon's doctor, you know, having that steady hand, that concentration level?
I think so. It's very close to that, that's for sure.
Yeah, because there's some of the discussions I always heard about surgeons especially is that you need the steady hand element. You need the composure and the concentration that takes place.
I think the most important thing is that you must do it repeatedly well. If, for example, if you get from one egg, like a donor, 15 eggs, 15 times she must inject.
Yeah.
15 times you must do it at your best. 15 times you want to get fertilization. We doctors have it relatively easy. We just ask in the afternoon how many eggs are fertilized. Okay? But there's so much work and dedication behind, which is difficult to describe.
Exactly. And just to make this clear, doctor, this is someone that has to be in a lab every day doing this, right?
That's correct.
All right. I see I get the nod at least.
And usually they're much longer
in
the laboratory or in the theater environment than we doctors are. Because we see patients, we consult and all that. But in a laboratory, it's like ongoing all the time.
I hope there's no, what do they call that syndrome when you have to look at a stare at a screen a lot, like some of the production guys that I know in the media sense, they say they can't see anything. I hope it's not the same thing that you have to suffer from. But then, doctor, if we just head towards sort of like a conclusionary part, just for the listeners also to know, in terms of this, where is Cape Windhoek Fertility Clinic situated here in Windhoek? I know where it is, but it's now, I have to assume that our listeners also don't know.
We got a very nice place. I'm very happy with it because it's discreet. It's a little bit tucked away. Because as we talked earlier about the stigma, and I think patients feel some a little bit awkward to go to a hospital where there's a big sign, fertility clinic. We're at Utopia. Utopia is in Nelson Mandela Avenue, number 64. And we're tucked away in the back. So the walking around there doesn't create any suspicion and is quite acceptable to most people who feel that they might be observed or they might be seen. And it works very well. I think most people are very happy. We've got a laboratory there. We've got a theater there, which is an excellent position and excellently equipped. And we are very happy in that environment there.
Exactly. And as you heard there, listeners, you know, discretion is the thing. But, well, you don't have to be ashamed, guys. It's we're all here to make children. Well, not all of us. At one stage, yes. Now, doctor, just having a look at when should one consider the freezing of an egg or taking these steps? I mean, we usually, you know, like you mentioned in the beginning, doctor, usually it's after much, you know, treatment, especially on the one side, like the stigma sometimes has now proven. The woman comes in regularly, but unfortunately, sometimes also the man. What could you advise in such an element if a couple, if people want to make sure, you know, let's be straightforward, let's understand the scenario. If there is an option or there is a goal to conceive, when should they consider such an element of coming in to Cape Windhoek, especially to get that treatment or to start with the consultations?
You're talking about egg freezing or generally?
Egg freezing. We can start with the egg freezing and then with the general discussion.
Okay, let me talk about egg freezing first. Because it's very particular and very distinct. Freezing over the last 8-10 years has become very sophisticated and very successful. We can freeze sperm successfully. We can freeze embryos very successfully. And we can freeze eggs successfully. And we also can freeze ovarian tissue successfully. That's very important. For example, women have cancer. And they're young. They're 23 or 24 years old. Now they get chemotherapy. Now the chemotherapy usually affects the ovaries very badly. So what we do is, before they start chemotherapy, we take the eggs out. So they preserve their fertility. Men who want to do sterilization, but they want to have that little anchor. Then we take the sperm, we freeze it, they can do their vasectomy, and maybe in 3, 4, 5 years time, they change their mind or they've got a new wife in their life, then we can thaw the sperm, still have a baby. Ovarian tissue freezing is the same. Chemetra was the first in South Africa to do that successfully. And there we take a whole chunk out of the ovary. And that gets frozen, and there are many, many eggs in there. The eggs then get cultured later, and one can achieve, with fertilization and ICSI, we can achieve embryo production. So it's very sophisticated. And there are also women who don't have a partner. Let's say a 32-year-old woman. She's a career woman. She doesn't want to be tied down with the men, but she would like to preserve her fertility because she knows that after year 40, fertility slowly declines. So she says, now I'm 32 or 33 or 35. I want to preserve my fertility. I'm going to have my eggs frozen. So we give her stimulation. We take the eggs out and they get frozen in the laboratory. She comes back 10 years later. She's got the eggs of a young woman. So she's got a chance of falling pregnant of a young woman. And there, it's actually, that's growing more and more, that women come to have the fertility preserved.
Now, doctor, you mentioned one good thing in terms of the...
Not one good thing.
No, but I'm taking the first one in terms of the chemotherapy treatment. Now, just sometimes also just for me to understand, does the chemotherapy sometimes have an impact in degradation of fertility?
Oh, yes, very much so. Especially in a woman. Because chemotherapy affects any fast dividing cells. Because cancer cells are very fast dividing. But also sperm, for example, also they divide very rapidly because we produce every day millions of sperm. So they divide very fast. So if you get chemotherapy, that sperm production gets affected. Blocked. The same with eggs. Very often women after chemotherapy are menopausal. And so we preserve the fertility by freezing their tissue, either sperm or eggs, before they start with chemotherapy.
All right. Doctor, then just on that note also, doctor, if you still wanted to add something that before we close our discussion, you can still do so before we end.
You asked a very important question just now. When should a couple see help by a fertility specialist? We usually would like the couple first to go to gynecologists. Usually gynecologists do basic investigations. They check for ovulation. They check that the tubes are open. They check that the semen is normal. And that's like the basic stuff. And on that, 60 to 70% of patients can already be diagnosed and seen what the problem is. And then the gynecologist can do some basic treatment. But they should not continue with that basic treatment for longer than 1 year. If after 1 year they're still not pregnant, they must see a fertility specialist because you get another year older and another year older. And fertility decreases every year. And especially if you're end of 30s or early 40s, it decreases very rapidly. So it's important that you don't waste your time by waiting for a miracle, which might occur, but usually doesn't occur. See a specialist as soon as possible.
I hope people don't laugh at me because I'm 37. Well, I'm luckily I'm not married yet. But in that note, doctor, thank you once again for this discussion.
Pleasure.
It was a very interesting one.
Good.
well, it also opened up my eyes for my, part. But on that note, right. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Don't panic.
No, I won't panic.
No, it's at 37, you know, you're not panic. For a man, it's not so bad. For a woman, it's the main thing, the age. Yeah? Okay.
Exactly, Doctor. Doctor, and on that note, once again, thank you for coming through.
Okay, pleasure.
And on that note, it also brings us to a short ad break. I almost said medical break. But after that, we'll be coming right back with the rest of the business and economics segment.
To our valued listeners and all Namibians, we are living in unprecedented times which have seen some extraordinary steps being taken, some of which have suspended the most basic of human rights.
And this is because for the first time ever since our country won its independence, we have been hit by a dangerous virus, which is a threat to our livelihoods, the COVID-19.
The situation calls for us not to panic, but to work together and eradicate the spread of the virus. At Eagle FM, we urge you to always wash your hands with soap or use hand sanitizers,
limit or avoid travel, and respect our laws and obey authority.
We have the answer, and we will fight this the Namibian way. As Namibians, together, as one Namibia, one nation. Let's stand together against COVID-19.
Speak your mind while respecting the opinions of others.
How can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean on the silver platter.
In terms of the infrastructure.
Of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first...
For social position to raise a child. What does that mean? Baby dumping.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
The commander say hold fire, they hold fire. When the commander says fire, they fire. You know, they are trained to kill. We are trained to arrest people and bring them before court.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
That's why some of us wear unbranded clothes. Because it's about selling their product.
So talk on Eagle FM. Eagle FM.
The first free-range eggs produced and packaged in Ondangwa, Walenga eggs, are now available in 6s and 18s. These fresh free-range eggs are produced daily and have a shelf life of over 28 days. Now listen up. Free-range eggs are the most nutritious and organic eggs available for human consumption. Just yummy. We at Walenga Eggs also want to give every Namibian an opportunity to own a share in our value chain. So if you want to sell or distribute Walenga Eggs, call Omalaiti Foods at 0811-273622 or 0811-660707. This is a first for Namibia. Walenga Eggs, the Great White.
Speak your mind while respecting the opinions of others.
How can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean on the silver platter.
In terms of the infrastructure.
Of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first...
For social position to raise a child. What does that mean? Baby dumping.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
The commander say hold fire, they hold fire. When the commander says fire, they fire. You know, they are trained to kill. We are trained to arrest people and bring them before court.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
That's why some of us wear unbranded clothes. Because it's about selling their product.
So talk on Eagle FM. Eagle FM,
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 100 Namibian dollars per month, including VAT for prepaid, or 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit na.paratus.africa for more information. Always prepare.
Now, coming back from our extended break, guys, and as you heard there, the first part of our discussion was centering on the, you know, the expertise level with regards within our medical industry in Namibia. Now, we then expand our discussion into another segment or heading into a more national, more global aspect. This is the role that a medical industry can play in a country. Now, still establishing rules of engagement, guys. You can come through it intermittently. You can come through in terms of on-air discussions with regards to the first part of our discussion and also secondly, heading into the rest of our discussion. Meaning, we take a look at also how important a medical industry plays within a country. Because a medical industry in any country is actually the most underrated in terms of a country's sort of like the profile, the economic profile that makes up a country. And especially in Namibia, which is identified as a dual system, meaning there's a public and a private healthcare system running next to each other. With the main private healthcare providers or entities in the country, for example, like some of the private ones like Mediclinic that has three outlets in the country. One in Windhoek, Swakopmund, Otjiwarongo. You have to remember that Mediclinic itself is an international platform, similar to the Cape Windhoek discussion that we had at the beginning of today's program, which is more continental. Meaning Cape Town, Namibia, Johannesburg, also heading into, at one stage, as you heard, Dr. Wiesvedel's noting, heading into Kenya as well. So that one also, in its own sense, does provide not just a local value or provides local value to in one setting. It also provides a continental value, meaning it assists in providing medical expertise. Now, guys, as what Kanjengo sometimes does also on the program is indicating to you the value that skills also provides. Now, we have to acknowledge the medical industry, the medical sector for itself is a highly skilled sector, meaning since you're dealing with people's health, you've got to be very well trained. You've got to be so well trained, you know, the time that you spend on training has to, you know, match up according to what the industry actually demands. Now, in Namibia's sense, you've also had various other aspects of, or let me call it sort of like niche aspects of the Namibian industry, medical industry, also privatized, which is privatized and also public. So you've got dentistry. Fertility treatment was the first one that we heard now about. And then also pediatrics. Pediatrics, that being child medical services or medical services that are only for children. Taking a look at something like this, and I'm going to expand our discussion even further, you know, with a take in terms of having a local look and then having a global look. Now, having a local look, this local look takes a look at, you know, just a makeup in terms of what healthcare funding looks like, as well as also healthcare workforce. And secondly, you know, just at the the overview picture. Now, the overview picture is the dual system that is now currently in existence. The dual system caters for, in essence, if you can't afford the one, you always have access to the other. We're not on the level of like the European zone or even like the UK. We pick the smallest guy, the UK. Although they do have 60 million people in that small space, not the UK specifically, England. England has 60 million people in that small little piece of the UK. 60 million. Germany has 80 million. France also 50 or 40 million, thereabout. Namibia 2.5, but in our 2.5 for our country size, we've got 3 people per, what is it? 3 people per square kilometer. 3 people per square kilometer is the living space that each person can demand. That's now if each Namibian stood next to each other across the country. Or, you know, you had to sectionalize the country or categorize the country up to square kilometers per section, per part throughout. Each Namibian would be sharing 1 square kilometer with 2 others. it's a decent amount of living space for sure. But in terms of having a look at the healthcare system of the country, wherein 48.9% of Namibians is reported to have to be living in rural communities. So that makes it about a strict 50%. Providing access to healthcare is also a significant challenge, proves to be that challenge. Now, Namibia's healthcare system consists of four distinct components: intermediate and referral hospitals, clinics, health centers, and then district hospitals. And this is primarily the public entities or the public access points in the public healthcare sector. Each component has a unique role and also a specialized medical staff. You get nurses that staff clinics who provide basic care. You get people who receive referrals to hospitals or to a health center or a district hospital for more serious cases. Then you get the most serious cases that obtain treatment in intermediate and referral hospitals as well. Now, Namibia has approximately 1,150 outreach points, 309 health centers, and 34 district hospitals. I'll still get to sort of like, you know, how important a health sector plays in a country's economy. I'll still get to that part. That discussion is still there. Other statistics about Namibia's health sector is also about the bed to population ratio, meaning you guys might have heard this during the COVID-19 pandemic, especially here in Windhoek, during the Delta wave, which was in the middle of last year. There was a bit of mention made with regards to the bed to patient ratio, meaning how many beds are available for how many, you know, that require the ICU treatment. That was specifically for the ICU treatment. But if you expand a little bit in terms of the bed to population ratio, you can look at a different picture, because include ICU into the, you know, into those patients that require to be housed within a medical facility. So the bed to population ratio is equivalent to that of a high income country. That's now Namibia's sort of like profile. Our profile with the bed to population ratio is equivalent to that of a higher income country. In higher income countries, we are matched according to or closest to new countries like New Zealand and Norway. Now, New Zealand has about 5 million people. Norway also similar in terms of their population size. And because of Namibia's low population density, about 21% of us live more than 10 kilometers away from a health provider. Now, a health provider, guys, is an access point. Is, you know, a point of access, or having access to a health provider, or having access to health services, or having access to the outlet that houses or that, you know, accommodates the health provider or the health staff. Mobile health clinics have also been crucial in this element, because they do reach the far-flung or the far-off rural communities. Second to that is also that they also provide a range of services, including immunizations, health education, as well as also the important other, you know, tests that sort of like give a picture, a holistic picture to residents and citizens in the far-off health or the far-off rural communities. There was one interesting discussion during last year that I had on our daily program, midday bulletin, which was on the radar when I still did it last year, in terms of where I interviewed a doctor that was, you know, she had initiated outreach programs because of essentially the COVID-19 pandemic that had taken center stage in terms of that need for the COVID-19 had to be taken first. She took it upon, she and her team, she and some volunteers took it upon themselves to facilitate for or to look after the forgotten ailments, the forgotten the forgotten conditions that people still suffer from, meaning your diabetics, meaning people that, you know, had developed a condition in the period of COVID as well. And that was essential because COVID, although it's now getting into year three, does not mean that the other ailments will go away or that the other conditions will go away. No. If you are a diabetic is one of those serious conditions, unfortunately, that cannot go away. It will not go away. Some people get born with diabetes, others develop it, and it's a pretty serious condition. I've worked with a handful of diabetics in my career, and you know, you sometimes, there is a bit of empathy or a little bit of sympathy, whichever one you want to go with, because this is a condition that, you know, unfortunately, they have to live with. This is their daily life. COVID comes along, now you can be forgotten. I almost said forgotten. You can be forgotten. You can be forgotten in the one sense. Because if for example, like that conversation I had with the doctor last year, not Dr. Wiesfeldl from earlier tonight, but last year, the doctor that began the outreach programs, she indicated, you know, a lot of people were in need of the everyday medication that they used to get before the pandemic came along, the everyday medication that, you know, to assist them with their conditions, to assist them with their daily needs, to assist them with their daily movements, to just, you know, and you know what, guys, if you have one of those conditions, the unfortunate thing is trying to deal with it or trying to forget about it sometimes is not the best, you know, the best route. Or even just partially trying to live with it. Because the medication essentially also helps you get through the day, also helps you continue with, first and foremost, if you have a job to go to, it'll help you try and do your job. Now, in most part, the Ministry of Health also partners up with private organizations like the USAID shops. And this is now from my resource that I also have here, in order also to provide some of these outreach programs themselves. However, you also still have the private volunteers or those with their medical backgrounds that get out there and try to do something. Mobile health clinics, as mentioned, guys, is one of those important sort of like outreach programs. Now, in terms of looking at funding in Namibia's healthcare system, in 2014, Namibia spent approximately $200 million to prevent and treat HIV/AIDS cases. Now, you have to remember, guys, that does partner up with some other projects because the USAID program, which features part of the US president's sort of like own outreach program, because the USAID one deals directly with with the AIDS project or with dealing with HIV. That is what I forgot the other name that it also has, but it comes from the US president's office directly. It's their direct sort of like budget allocation in that same sense. Okay, I see the first caller is trying to get in. Let me first get them in before I head on with that train of thought. Eagle FM, good evening. Okay, missed call right there. Now, in that same sense, guys, the aspect, there is, well, we have heard of the stories in terms of the international pharmaceutical market. That is developing their way and also making money from the COVID pandemic. Let's get this next caller in. Eagle FM, good evening. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Fine, you, sir.
Good.
Mm.
Yeah, I started the Queenie's program. I started the time again.
Whose program, sir?
Queenie.
Who's Queenie?
Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. Elizabeth. No, she's only after this. She's starting at 8. So it'll be 10 minutes from now.
Okay.
Yeah, you can call through then, sir.
Thank you, sir.
No problem. Now, as we head into the last 10 minutes, guys, and this is just, you know, getting into sort of like the end part of our discussion. We'll still be continuing on with this for tomorrow night because it is an interesting one. So this is technically like a two-part session. Elevim, good evening.
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Yes, how are you doing, sir?
I'm live on there.
Yes, you are.
Okay. No, actually, I have nothing to contribute tonight, Ed. With regard to the statistic that you are busy presenting right now on the health sector, where one can obtain that?
Okay. So I've got the website's name is Borgen, meaning B-O-R-G-E-N.
One second. Okay. What's the website name?
A Borgen Project. B-O-R.
Okay.
G-E-N.
Okay.
Project. .org.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just search their healthcare in Namibia.
Okay. Yeah. Lovely.
All right. No problem.
Thanks a lot.
Pleasure, man. Now, getting into that sort of like discussion point, guys. Now, although this quantity of 200 million, it is in US dollars. It is in US dollars. Now, the thing is, you know, there are also other ailments, other things to look at. And in 2019, the approximately 210,000 adults and children were believed to have been living with HIV still in Namibia, which is about 11.5% of these adults and children are between 14 to 49. Now, Namibia is not alone. You have to understand, guys, we're not alone with that regard because that also forms part of another international sort of like ongoing medical approach. But the workforce that forms part of this industry in the country, we actually have a large problem. Now, the most important thing is access in the public sector, meaning access or lack of doctors or lack of public doctors. Now, there are more private doctors than public doctors in many regions. In Hartab, for example, you've got 80% of the doctors work in the private sector, which is a shortage of about public doctors that actually increase the cost of healthcare. Now, according to the World Bank, there are approximately 1,222 doctors in our country, 784 doctors that work in the public sector, and 438 work in the private sector. Half of our country's physicians work in COMAS, which is if you have to compare and take a look at the economics of the situation, it would make sense for them to be housed here because you have to look at also, firstly, where you can make money if you're in the private sector. Now, Namibia, this is also the region that houses the capital. And that's where most of these service providers would also be based in. In 2018 alone, the comparison, there's also a ratio here. The ratio between people to doctors was approximately for every 1,000 Namibians, you had 0.33 doctors. For every 1,000 Namibians, there was 0.33 doctors. Now, it's not to say that it's actually a story, you know, or an issue that can be highlighted or sort of like, not highlighted, but sorted out overnight. Because when you expand to sort of like taking a look at where the global healthcare outlook would be heading into 2022, that's not for the year. No, I know we're now into month three of the year. Month three is basically done. And this was a very nice report done by Deloitte itself. Deloitte is a international consultancy services organization. And they have this nice overview and outlook for 2022 in terms of the global healthcare sector, as well as also the issues that can be identified. Now, they sectionalized this report of theirs into a handful of nice subcategories. So you've got health equity to look at. You've got environmental, social, and governance aspects to look at. You've got the mental health and well-being aspect to also consider. Then you've got digital transformation and healthcare delivery model convergence to look at. And finally, the last two segments being future of the medical science and also public health reimagined. Now, before I end off for today's discussion, guys, remember that I'll still be continuing this discussion into tomorrow's program. So this is part one, heading into part two for tomorrow. And then we will have this very nice global discussion or global outlook discussion heading into that segment. As always, just to let you know that the next program is up next, but still staying on Namibia and just, you know, highlighting some important, information elements. The one good thing also to take a look at is that in terms of our population size, having a look at also at our, you know, the life expectancy elements after independence or heading from independence, because a lot of the statistics that you can find online about Namibia regarding our medical industry and so on, and then expanding that into the global medical industry, you know, around the world, life expectancy itself in Namibia actually increased from 40.3 years in 1950 to 65.7 years for women, from 59 years for men in 1990, you know, and mainly this was due to the impact that first and foremost that HIV/AIDS first had on the population, because it dropped to 53 years for women, 50 years for men. In 2004, and then ever since again, it has risen again also to 65.4 years for women and 56.2 years for men. Now, this also means that the country has improved, but it is still also still an uphill battle that we still have to contend with in terms of the world with the longest life expectancy sort of like ratio, which currently stands at 83.3. But one of the most important things also, having a look at sort of like, you know, for the last 2 minutes or two spare change minutes that I still have left, the fertility rate, linking into the, you know, first aspect of today's discussion, in 1950, just some of these important statistics. In 1950, Namibia had a fertility rate of what? 5.96 children per woman. In 2015, this number also decreased almost to 2.95 children per woman. Now, this placed Namibia, or putting this together with the life expectancy, sort of like rate of life expectancy, this indicates that Namibia Namibia as a country is doing well itself since 1950, but also globally. You know, we are also still looking good in terms of that fertility rate element with the life expectancy, discussion partnered up with it. Now, Namibia also seems to be doing better than most other sub-Saharan countries when looking at this specific data element. But also, you know, if we have to include those sustainable development goals that the UN is stressing from their part, that adds up to 2030. That is, you know, one thing also that has to be considered, because you have to partner it up with those SDGs that the UN themselves are stressing at every other aspect. But this does lead us up to the end of today's discussion, guys. Do stay tuned as the programming here on Eagle FM still continues after, over the next 20 seconds, as Elizabeth will be coming on for her discussion. That'll start off at 8. After that, you can find the rest of the programming still to follow heading in to the rest of this evening. Stay tuned here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM, and see you tomorrow.
You don't just put anything in your body, you choose only the best. That's why we recommend Manol Oil. At Global Parts, we offer the best quality oil at the best prices.
Our engine oils are manufactured in Germany, so you know it's quality as usual you can count on. Our popular 5W40 and 15W40 are more than your average oils. It's in the words of Tina Turner, simply the best. Unbeatable value for money for all Namibian motorists, because we at Global Parts care for you and for Namibians. So get your premium oils at real affordable prices. Global Parts, global reach for best local advice and prices.
To our valued listeners and all Namibians, we are living in unprecedented times which have seen some extraordinary steps being taken, some of which have suspended the most basic of human rights.
And this is because for the first time ever since our country won its independence, we have been hit by a dangerous virus, which is a threat to our livelihoods, the COVID-19.
The situation calls for us not to panic, but to work together and eradicate the spread of the virus. At Eagle FM, we urge you to always wash your hands with soap or use hand sanitizers,
limit or avoid travel, and respect our laws and obey authority.
We have the answer, and we will fight this the Namibian way. As Namibians, together, as one Namibia, one nation. Let's stand together against COVID-19.
Speak your mind while respecting the opinions of others.
But how can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean on the silver platter.
In terms of the infrastructure.
Of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first...
Or social position to raise a child. What does that mean? Baby dumping.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
The commander say hold fire, they hold fire. When the commander says fire, they fire. You know, they are trained to kill. We are trained to arrest people and bring them before court.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
That's why some of us wear unbranded clothes. Because it's about selling their product.
So talk on Eagle FM. Eagle FM, the eye.